Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples
of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father,
and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them
to obey everything I have commanded you.
And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age."
Welcome to Exploring Missions, connecting mission needs with those equipped by God to meet those needs across the world or across town. And now, the host of Exploring Missions, Bert Harper.
Have you ever prayed, "God, break my heart for what breaks yours"? I want to tell you, I want to have the mind of Christ. I want to have the heart of God, and I want to hear His voice. We're going to talk about something today on Exploring Missions that I think would be important for all of us to hear: God's heart for the poor. I've met those. I've worked with them. The first place that I ever worked was a mission point on the, quote, wrong side of the tracks and on a dead-end street, where I met some people that I dearly loved, and God gave me a heart for them. Well, today on Exploring Missions, we want you to identify in your mind and in your heart someone that you might could make a difference in their lives. Again, this is Bert Harper along with Nathan Harper. And Nathan, we're going to look at this. This is a Bible study, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to kind of almost a small snippet of a survey, mostly probably in the Old Testament, but we're going to look at, in the Bible, how God has revealed His heart for those that we would say are the poor, those that are trapped in poverty. They're impoverished, not just material. There are lots of different levels and layers to poverty, but we're also thinking about global poverty, not just what we have seen and experienced when we see someone in our little town and we kind of identify them as someone who is poor. More than likely, there are millions and millions of others that we don't see, maybe on the other side of the world, who are even worse shaped than that person. It's hard to compare, and we're not wanting to compare.
That's not what we're here
but
for.
You can't really compare poverty in the U.S. with poverty globally. So just know that there are millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people trapped in poverty right now. God has a heart and a love for those people, and He cares for each individual, each community. And so we want to see some of that in God's Word today, and that's what we're going to do.
Okay. Well, we want to dig in, and we're going to dig into the Word of God. God identifies the poor, and He loves them, doesn't
yeah.
He? He loves the poor, and He uses that term quite often. Can I go ahead and read some scriptures from Proverbs chapter 14, verse 31 says this: "He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy." What a statement, Nathan.
Yeah, you just see a close connection, how God Himself identifies that closely with someone who is poor. So the poor are on God's heart, but He identifies Himself with the poor. And so how we treat someone who is poor, God feels that. We're showing what we feel about God. We show what we believe about God by how we treat the poor. Contempt to the poor or oppressing the poor shows contempt to their maker. Kindness to the poor honors God.
Amen. I'm just going to say this, start off, when God sent His Son to the earth, let me say He was born in a stable for animals, and they placed Him in, probably it was a carved out stone. It wasn't wooden, probably, you know, but king born there. I think the identity there is real, don't you?
Yeah, He definitely identifies with the poor. Psalm 68:5 is another verse. I know you have another one in Proverbs to read, but Psalm 68 verse 5 says, "A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows is God in His holy dwelling." So not only does God identify with the poor, there are aspects of poverty, like being an orphan, being a widow, and God takes an active role in caring for the fatherless, defending the widow. God, even in his holy dwelling, he's separated from us. He's different. He's set apart. He's holy. He's majestic. He's awesome. We can't express enough words to describe who God is and his character and how awesome he is. And yet in all of that, he comes down to the fatherless, to the widow, to the poor.
You know, when you look at the Bible, you'll see that God really does put some emphasis on how we treat the widows who in that day, poor, fatherless. But another one here is in Proverbs 19, verse 17. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. Man.
Yeah.
What a statement.
It's packed in there, isn't it?
It really is.
Some truth, some principle. But the way God sees it is when we give to the poor, we are lending or investing in the heavens. We're investing in God. We're lending to the Lord. So in other words, when you give to someone who's poor, you don't expect payment back. You don't expect it be reciprocated. Guess who reciprocates? Guess who gives back? The Lord. And he does with interest. Read it again.
He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. That's our God.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he did what, Nathan? He gave. There's two things you need to check up on your life if you're a believer. One is an attitude of gratitude, thankfulness. And the other is, I would say, the spirit of generosity. Those two things. And what you do is to the poor. So here it is. God identifies with the poor, and he loves the poor.
All right. So that's just the introduction. But let's kind of talk about the word poor or poverty in English. You will find references to poverty, to the poor, impoverishment, all those variations of that. There's lots of different Hebrew and Greek words, but when they're translated into English, it's poverty or poor. You see over 2,000 or around 2,000 references to the poor and poverty in the Bible.
2,000.
Yeah, so do you think it's important to God?
Sounds like we said, if he says it one time, it's important. But what if he says it, 2,000 times? I think it is.
So we've talked about on this program before God's heart for the nations. And that word nations appears in the Old Testament about 500 times, probably over 100 times in the New Testament. But poor even outweighs that by far. So God has a heart for the poor. What are some of these words? And we're just going to run through these quickly. I don't want to bore anybody, and I don't know how to pronounce Hebrew, but I'll do my best. So one of the Hebrew words is dal. And dal is specifically those who compose the lower class, and they lack the material wealth of the upper class. And so as we go through these words, you'll just see a big picture being painted of there's variations, there's levels, there's different aspects of poverty, and all these words kind of bring out a few differences like that.
When you hear that, and I don't mean to say one particular nation, but you think of India so much that have all these upper, lower class caste system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's really some of the poverty is built into the how they view God.
Yeah.
The better you view God and have a real view of God, the more I would say you concerned about it not being something that, okay, that's just the way it is. No, we need to look at it.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned India and then we talked about this word dal. I don't know if there's a linguistic connection whatsoever between Hebrew and a Hindi language in India. But you know what you call the lowest caste in India, the untouchables, they're the Dalit. I don't know. That's above my understanding, but there might not be a connection. It might just be coincidental.
Our producer over here, Devin Patrick, who spent some time in India, I could see his face. He caught on that. Yeah. That's very similar.
Another Hebrew word is ani. A-N-I is how we would say it in English, ani. It's the oppressed poor. So not only do they lack material wealth of the upper class, they are oppressed by the upper class. It's emphasizing the pain that the socially powerless person experiences when the rich and strong take advantage of them. Mm. God sees that.
He does.
And there's a word for it. I mean, that's how important it is to God that he notices that. I probably wouldn't notice it if I saw it, but God does.
God does. God, give me your eyes. Let me see things the way you see them.
Yeah. Another word, ebion, a person in dire want who is dependent on others. So that's another little aspect of poverty.
You can't help but think of a rich man in Lazarus.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, he just got the crumbs from the rich man's table, things that fell to the floor.
Yeah. Another Hebrew word is rus or rus, R-U-S is how it's written here, but it refers to those who are desperately poor and often weak and unprotected, lacking both the material necessities of life and suffering from low social status and being vulnerable to oppression. So those are just the Hebrew Old Testament words. There's a couple of words in the Greek New Testament. One word is panes, and this might be the one that some of us can identify with ourselves, that we might have experienced some of ourselves. Panes in the New Testament refers to the working poor, maybe living paycheck to paycheck, day to day, wage laborers. Their poverty is shown in comparison with the position of those who are well-to-do, who do not have to work for their sustenance. And guess what? It's kind of unique, but there's only two uses of that word in the New Testament, panes. So most of the time in the New Testament, when you hear poverty or poor, it's this next word, patochos, those so poor that they are reduced to a beggarly situation. You can think about the poor people, the beggars that Jesus encountered or the apostles encountered in Jerusalem and in other villages, and they're unable to meet their own basic needs, depending on others for help.
When you put those two categories, only two uses of the one that's the working poor, and then those that are in beggarly situations, blind, how many times lame?
Mm-hmm.
So we find this quite often in Jesus taking time to deal with them. You can't help but think of Peter and John going to the temple.
Yeah.
And they said, silver and gold, we don't have. But what happened? That man was healed, and then he was ready to go out and to make a difference. So when someone is lifted from that situation, Jesus and the apostles would kind of give them some, I would say, not just encouragement, but I would say commands and guidelines. Hey, you're not in that situation anymore. We've made a difference. You need to make a difference in others.
Yeah, that's right. And also another kind of thing to bring out and think about, when you think about especially the beggars that were encountered in the Gospels or in Acts, I think every single one of them, they were beggars, not just because they were poor, but for another reason. In other words, their poverty was brought on by blindness or by being lame or another situation. And so that's what Jesus went in to heal and restore and remove that issue that brought on poverty. But I think it's good to think about this in the sense that I'll just speak for myself, and I know this is probably true for other folks listening. It's easy for me to think about the poor, especially here in the U.S., and I think my default position is, well, they must have done something to bring on their poverty. You know, whatever the case might be, whether, you know, whatever, I'm not going to say all the things, but in my mind, my default position has usually been they did something. They weren't born into it.
There's no excuse in America
right.
for a man. I mean,
that's what we think.
That. Yeah.
But I believe biblically, but also globally, right now in the world, most people around the world who are in poverty, experiencing poverty, did nothing to gain poverty. They were born into it.
Right.
Or a situation was forced on them and it caused poverty. And I think that's a better biblical mindset to have when we experience poverty. There are some people who bring it on themselves, but they're fewer than those who did not have a choice in the matter. All right, let's look in the Old Testament real quickly. Deuteronomy chapter 24 has a good bit to say about poverty and the poor, and there's like kind of just some principles of the law, of how God's people are supposed to treat the poor and deal with poverty according to God's law and his covenant that he set up with his people. God established the law, and one way you can look at the law is systematic or systemic practices of God's called covenant people. So like God's giving the law, but he's also, what he's giving sometimes is some practices, things we should put into practice in our society or in our community or in our lives. And so these were given to protect and provide for the poor. So Deuteronomy chapter 24, let me read verses 10 through 13 first, and we'll just keep commenting on the ones that we read. It says, "When you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, do not enter his house to collect what he offers as security. You must stand outside while the man you are making the loan to brings the security out to you. If he is a poor man, you must not sleep in the garment he has given as security. Be sure to return it to him at sunset. Then he will sleep in it and bless you, and this will be counted as righteousness to you before the Lord your God." Kind of maybe weird when you hear it,
yeah.
But it makes sense if you think about the dignity of every person, the worth of every person, and you don't want to take the man's blanket or whatever he has to sleep in overnight.
There should be some protected items, some protected things about an individual when you are collecting or whatever, even if it was a loan. There's some limits there, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that what I'm hearing, Nathan?
Yep, absolutely. There's some limits. And that's what God is doing here in the law, setting up limits that protect the poor. If there were no limits, the rich would have their way and the poor would be crushed. And so God is, he has a heart for the poor. He identifies with the poor. He loves the poor. And so he's setting up these limits for God's people to act differently than the rest of the world. Let's read Deuteronomy 24, verses 14 through 15. "Do not oppress a hired hand who is poor and needy, whether one of your brothers or one of the foreigners residing within a town in your land. You are to pay him his wages each day before the sun sets, because he is poor and depends on them. Otherwise, he will cry out to the Lord against you, and you will be held guilty."
Ooh.
Yep. So,
a fair wage.
Yep.
At a right time.
That's right. Don't hold it. And in those days, and a lot of places today in the world, people go buy their daily bread that day. And right. So the night before, they need their money for that day's wages. And that's how it kind of operates. There's not a lot of banks in a lot of places in the world where poor people can have access to that. So day wages is kind of in the same kind of thing in operation even today.
And this is Deuteronomy 24.
Yep.
Now, let me set this up. The Deuteronomy passages is the second law. It's the second time the law has been given. He gave it to them in Exodus before they were supposed to go into the land, but because of their rebellion, it was 40 years later, and God does what? He reminds them of the law. This is so important, I'm going to make sure you get it down. So this is important stuff.
So the last part of Deuteronomy 24, 19 through 22, we're going to read that. "When you reap the harvest in your field and you forget a sheaf in the field, do not go back to get it. It is to be left for the foreign resident, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you knock down the fruit from your olive tree, you must not go over the branches again. What remains will be for the foreign resident, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you must not glean what is left. What remains will be for the foreign resident, the fatherless, and the widow. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I am commanding you to do this."
Nathan, you can't help but go to Ruth when you hear that. It does two things. It causes the owner to not be greedy, but it gives those that are poor opportunity to work to receive benefits.
Yep.
If we could only, I know that was an agrarian society, complete like that, and it was.
But the principle still holds.
The principle is still true, no matter what.
That's that twofold responsibility for those that have resources, to not take all of the resources, to leave some for those that are poor, that don't have any resources and they have need. But those that do have need and will take the little that you leave for them, there needs to be some dignity of work and effort given in earning that remainder.
And you can go to the book of Ruth and see missional work. Jesus would be a descendant of Ruth. And the whole idea of what God did there showed initiative. So there's got to be initiative on the person's part that is producing it and the person's part that is reaping those that was left over.
And in Deuteronomy 24, we saw that there was a special kind of, if you want to say the poor are close to God's heart, there's three groups of the poor that are especially close to God's heart. And it's the foreigners, strangers, aliens, sojourners. In this passage that I was reading, it's the foreign resident, is how it's translated. But yeah, the strangers, the widows, or the fatherless, or orphans.
Yeah.
Those three are always mentioned in the Old Testament over and over again. Really special access to God's heart, because those are the people in the lowest position socially, the most oppressed groups of people.
Very vulnerable.
Yeah, vulnerable groups.
Yes.
And they're close to God's heart. So keep those groups in your mind as you study the Bible. We could say a lot about what the prophets have to say in the Old Testament.
Especially Amos,
especially
right?
Amos. So your assignment is to read the book of Amos and notice God's heart for the poor.
Yeah, if you don't believe that, and if you don't have a heart for the poor, he kind of comes.
He'll give it to you.
He'll give it to you.
But let's look. Well, there is another prophet that we want to read about or read from, and that's in Isaiah chapter 58. Would you mind looking that up? Isaiah chapter 58. Verses 10 and 11. And while you're looking at that, this is a beautiful picture that God's people, and that hopefully includes all of us, God's people, as they care for the poor, become like a well-watered garden, both providing and being provided for. In other words, one of the wrong mentalities that we can have is what we would call a scarcity mentality. If we believe there's a scarcity of resources, we're going to be tempted to hold on to those and not be generous with them. Because if we give them away, they go away. But that's not how the kingdom operates. The kingdom operates under an abundance mentality, that if we give what we have, guess what? God provides more.
That's what he does.
And so let's read Isaiah chapter 58, verses 10 through 11.
If you extend your soul to the hungry, you satisfy the afflicted soul. Then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. I didn't know you was going to ask me to read that. I got that highlighted and underlined in my scriptures. That's how good God is, isn't it?
Yeah, and that the way that verse starts out, that passage starts out, if you spend yourself in behalf of the hungry, the word really refers to being poured out. So you've got a container of water and you pour it out for the poor. Guess what happens? God fills that back for you.
I'm going to talk about an old movie real quick. It'll take me a second. There's one called The Bishop's Wife. And the angel is played by Cary Grant. I know it's an old movie. This guy's got this bottle, and every time he drinks something of it, he feels better, not intoxicated, but then it fills right back up. Every time I see that movie, I think of that, and I think of that passage.
So let me read something for us in a little book that I have. It's called Sharing God's Heart for the Poor. It's a small little easy read. It's by Amy Sherman. But let me read how she closes the book and talks about the pouring out of the water, or the spending ourselves on behalf of the hungry. She says, "This is the same fear that the widow of Zarephath must have had. Her story is recounted in 1 Kings 17. There's a famine and drought throughout the land, God tells the prophet Elijah to go to a place called Zarephath and informs him that he will encounter a poor widow there and is to ask her for something to eat and drink. Now, we know the rest of the story. She's on her last bit of food, and she gives it anyway. She spends herself for him. She's the one in poverty. And so what happens was that the jar of flour that she had, and she was going to use it all up, it was not used up. And the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with this word from the Lord, that it wasn't used up because God himself replenished what the widow poured out. Now, if you think about the widow of Zarephath, she was poor to begin with. She was a widow. Her son was an orphan. She was also a foreigner. She was all three of those categories. You see, all three of those categories that are special to God's heart, right here in the story with Elijah, 1 Kings 17. Jesus reminded a lot of people of Elijah in his day. I think some of that was because he cared for the widow, the orphan, the stranger, and the poor. Jesus himself poured out himself, gave himself, spent himself on our behalf. We were spiritually poor, and he gave his life to redeem us. And then God raised him from the dead. Yeah. So the emptying is not the end of the story. The filling becomes the end of the story. The emptying is just how you experience the filling. So I believe for all of us to remember, first, that God has a heart for the poor. He identifies with the poor. And he set up practices for us to live that protect them, provide for them. But as we care for the poor and as we pour out our lives on behalf of those that are in poverty, we become like that well-watered garden. We'll experience a pouring out, but we'll also experience the filling, and we'll experience that resurrection power that Jesus gives, because it's right there close to God's heart. And I don't want to miss God's heart. Yeah. I don't want to miss what God sees. I want to be used by him. And so our prayer for you today is that God will use you on behalf of the poor. Those that might be around you, maybe there are many that you come in contact with daily, but possibly on the other side of the world. We have, as God's people, a responsibility to share God's heart with those that are in poverty.
Thank you for listening to Exploring Missions, and may God break your heart for what breaks God's heart and concern for those who are poor.